Welcome to From Ground to Great, a business, aviation, and personal growth podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Reese-Jimenez. So how are you doing today?
I'm great, Daniel. Thanks so much. Thanks for having me on the podcast. I'm really excited to share a little bit about my life, my story, in the hopes that other people find it entertaining and maybe valuable.
Yes. Yeah. I'm so excited that you reached out to me. I've been wanting to get into real estate a little bit, and that's what you're doing now. Among a whole bunch of things, which is really cool. I think one of the things that is really interesting too is that you had a good aviation career and that you were also a veteran. So thank you for your service. I kind of just want to hear a little bit just from your story, give a background of who you are, what you do, and then we'll go from there.
Perfect. So real quick, you know, 1 to 2 minute background is I grew up in the Midwest. September 11th happened when I was a senior in high school, and so I felt a bit of a call to serve. I graduated high school, floundered for a little bit, and then decided to join the Navy. I spent 5 years in the Navy. My specialty was combat trauma. I was what's known as a Fleet Marine Force Corpsman. So I got sent out to California. I was stationed with the Marine Infantry Battalion. I did a couple of deployments. I learned a lot of really valuable skills that after I got out, I did nothing with because I was really exhausted from having to deal with this high stress, high tempo environment. At that point in time, I got into commercial real estate in Phoenix, Arizona. It happened to be really either A, lucky or, you know, fortuitous, if you will. And I started off as a multifamily broker. And after doing that for about 2 years, I saw how much money was being made on the other side of the ledger, right? How much money the owners, the principals of these transactions were making. And I was saying, I'm sourcing the deals, you know, I'm finding you a buyer, I'm finding you the seller, I'm doing all of this stuff. All you're doing is finding the money. So maybe I should start finding the money for these deals and doing them myself. So at that point in time, you know, as you can imagine, this was during the Great Recession. There was a lot of distressed property. So I really cut my teeth in a distressed market. I learned short sales, REOs, trustee sales. I learned how to buy loans from banks and other lenders and special servicers. I made a lot of money doing that. And then I was lucky enough to take a few years off. I got into skydiving and base jumping and flying planes and wingsuiting and doing other kind of crazy adventures. I think something happened in the military. Maybe some adrenaline wires got hardwired. And it was a really great fit for me. There was a lot of camaraderie and brotherhood. And then after that, I really got turned on to development, sustainable development in particular. I think that there's a little factoid, and that's buildings, the built environment consumes about 40% of our energy worldwide. The single largest consumption of energy is from buildings and the built environment. So I wanted to be a part of the group of people, the cadre of people that were helping to usher in an anthroposphere or a built environment that is healthier for the occupants, that is a better steward of our resources, that creates biodiversity instead of reducing biodiversity, right? The list goes on of all the amazing things that fosters connection amongst the people, right? So that is a real passion of mine. That's what I've been doing the last few years. I run a real estate investment company where we do two things. We provide credit or we provide loans to people that are investing in real estate. And then we also have real estate investment opportunities on the ownership side. So, you know, on the debt side and on the equity side. So nice. Hopefully that was succinct and to the point.
No, yeah, no, that's great. And that's so funny that you mentioned that. So I guess for me, since you don't know me too well, I have my private pilot license and my aircraft mechanic license.
All right.
Yeah. And I've always been really driven to do business. And I think it's one of those great just career opportunities where I feel like you get what you put in and you're able to make a decision and create a culture, an environment where it's your slice of the world and you're able to put it in. I don't know, it's just creativity at its finest, you know? And I think that's what we're put on this earth to do and to create and build, inspire and help other people do the same. So from that, I've been trying to do a lot of businesses. Right now I have a vending machine business, which is pretty fun. Yeah, I started it with my friend from high school and it's been going great. Just kind of getting into it. It's just such a great experience because there's so many things that school doesn't cover at all, or it's so vague that there's no way of really knowing unless you just dive right in.
I couldn't agree more. My wife's an educator. She's got her degree from a master's from one of those fancy East Coast Ivy League schools. And she's really great in education. And I'll say a couple of things real quick. Confucius, there's a great quote that was attributed to Confucius. And that is, if you're planning for a year, plant rice. If you're planning for a decade, plant trees. And if you're planning for a century, educate kids. Right. And I think our education system is totally broken. To your point, there's a lot that we don't learn. Listen, you have to learn when the Constitution was signed. You have to learn calculus or algebra. You have to learn English. These are all important, but you don't have to learn how to balance a checkbook, and you don't have to learn how credit card interest can handicap you the rest of your life. You know, so I think there's a real mismatch in what we're standardizing our testing to. And if you go back and look at kind of where modern education has come from, you know, the General Education Board, the Rockefellers, and it was really designed to create employees, right? And that's so right. I think our schools are in desperate need of a reboot, a reformatting and a reboot to equip folks like me. I didn't get this stuff in school. Folks like you, you know, you're not getting it in school. I had to read books. I had to educate myself because my parents weren't taught it. I'm guessing your parents probably weren't taught it. And so there's a huge opportunity in education. And even more so, there's a huge opportunity for young folks like you that have the desire to go out and teach themselves and make something of themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's just the big thing is just bringing awareness to it and having people come and really it's awareness and then having people actually be motivated and interested to be able to go into this stuff and just changing the switch of, yes, you could do this yourself. Of course you can choose a nice cushy job, but in the long term, like, why not take risk, right? And the worst thing that happens is you fail. And then I've had a whole bunch of stuff that I've done and failed. You know, I was trying to look for a patent. I was like, oh, okay, got taken. Okay, next business idea, right? You know,
how can we
add to it? Yeah,
you're so on point with that. You know, some people view life in a fixed mindset, right? You either have it or you don't. And then there's the growth mindset, which when you have a growth mindset, failure is one of the best things that can happen to you because that's feedback. That's an opportunity to learn. You know, we have a philosophy here at my company, and that is embrace the failures. That means it's just as important to find out what not to do as it is to find out what to do. And, you know, you really nailed it by failing early. And I think to fail young, like, we should be empowering our young people, you know, to fail. I want you guys and I want other folks to go out and start businesses that don't work. Start ideas, try patents, this is how we get to engineering breakthroughs, medical breakthroughs, other technological breakthroughs, is by trying things that don't work. Edison didn't invent the light bulb in his first try. It took thousands and thousands of iterations until he got it. Yet we have this personal judgment and the societal judgment from somebody, you know, oh, they failed. Look at them. And, you know, instead, it's like, that's where the learning happens, man. Right there at the edge is where the learning happens. And that's where failure happens. And that's a great place to live and to be generating from.
Yeah, no, that's, can't even say it better myself. You know, that's right on. And I want to ask you, just based on what you're saying, and it really ties into personal growth. And I feel like everyone has a really unique story and how they started their journey. And I would like to ask if you would like to share, when did you start on that journey of just believing there's more to it and being able to implement things and increase my own just knowledge or just the growth mindset to be able to just go and do things? Where did the drive or your journey start for personal growth?
You know, I think it happened at a relatively young age. I grew up in a middle-class family, right? Middle class, maybe lower middle class. And often we didn't worry about if there was food on the table, right? That wasn't a concern. We didn't worry about if we were going to have a roof over our head. But that was about it, right? And so frequently growing up, I'd have friends that would get something, whatever that something was, or go on vacation or play a particular sport that cost a fair amount of money. And I'd say, you know, Mom or Dad, I want that. And they would say, no, we don't have the money, right? That was frequently the response. We don't have the money. And very quickly from a young age, I associated, huh, so there's this thing called money. And if you have it, you can do what you want, right? So, and if you don't, you can't. So I very quickly associated financial independence to freedom, right? To do what you want, live the way that you want. And I'm very strong-willed, some would say stubborn. And I decided to start, like, this was a problem that I saw other people had solved, right? My friends' families and other people had solved this problem, so why can't I? And so I started reading, you know, like Robert Kiyosaki or Think and Grow Rich or The Millionaire's Mind and these different books at a young age. I was, before I was even a teenager, I was reading these books. And one thing I learned very quickly on is that, you know, money is just a concept. It's not real. It's just an idea. It's a social contract that we have. And as soon as you understand that money is a concept, suddenly it goes from being this very kind of hard, rigid thing to suddenly it's a lot more malleable. You know, it can change. And maybe, oh, wow, well, if money's malleable, maybe I can have two sources of income. And if I can have two sources of income, why can't I have three or four or 10? You know, and so from a young age, I started kind of believing in these different concepts, and maybe being a bit of a contrarian served me well in life. It certainly made, you know, adolescence difficult, you know, just being a child and doing what everyone else says you shouldn't do. But it's made being an entrepreneur exceptionally easy. I almost thrive on when people tell me I can't do something. I almost thrive on that. I'm like, thank you for that log. I'm adding to my fire. Thank you.
Yeah. You know, and it's so cool just talking to different entrepreneurs, and it's just, there's so many similarities. And this is why I love doing the podcast, because it just, you just are able to learn from so many people and just see, like, yeah, everyone has that same energy and drive. I think you can just see it when you're speaking. That it's just like, I really resonated with you when you're saying, like, you felt like, why am I getting put a limitation on me? Where is this of like, we either have money or we don't, and we don't have enough money for that. It's like, where does that limitation come from? Is it really a limitation? Who's putting that limitation, right? Yeah. Family, society,
somebody,
right?
Programmed it. Yep. Somebody programmed it. And so here's two things I want to share, because I think this is just, if we all adopted this, it would be a great thing. Number one, I think you should find people in life that have what you want. And that applies across the board, physically, financially, spiritually, relationship, you name it. Find people that have what you want. Do what they do. You will get what they've got. It's a very simple formula, right? I'm not going to reinvent the wheel. I'm just going to find people that have what I want. I'm going to do what they do. I will get what they've got. Very simple. And the other part of that is, you know, kind of being strong-willed and stubborn. I have a fundamental core belief down to my very essence. And that is this. There is only one set of laws in this life I am bound to follow. And those are the laws of physics. Everything else is a polite suggestion. Listen, should you stop at that stop sign? Yes, you probably should, because if you don't, you might get in an accident. You know, should you not go speeding, or should you not steal from your neighbor? Well, yeah, they might steal back from you, right? But you don't actually have to follow any laws except the laws of physics. And as soon as you can kind of make this mental shift, suddenly anything that is physically possible is possible. So why can't I make $1 million this year? Well, I guess I can. There's nothing actually physically stopping me from doing that. I just need to unlock the right doors to get there. So that's kind of one of my fundamental core beliefs, is, you know, the only laws that I have to live by are the laws of physics.
Yeah, no, that's such a great, that's, yeah, I love that. I'm going to try to use that, because it's just so true. It's just, I think, when I talk to a lot of people my age, or even people older and stuff, or people you try to get advice from, it's like, it's really important what you just said. Make sure you're getting advice or reading about people that you want to be. Make sure you're not getting advice from people that aren't where you want to be. Right?
Yep. No, you nailed it. You absolutely nailed it on the head. I love my family. I love my parents. I love other people. And they'll give me relationship advice, for example, and I just kind of have to look at what their relationship history has been. And I might say, you know, I'm going to filter that, right? And when we're kids, we think our parents have all of the knowledge. And then when we get older, we realize, you know, maybe mom and dad weren't right, or maybe the teachers weren't right. And we, my wife and I, we've got young kids right now, they're 4 and 6. And even to this day, right now, still, we teach them, just because an adult says it does not mean it is right. You need to think about it yourself to determine whether or not it's true. And that includes mommy and daddy, right? So even what we're saying, you need to challenge.
Yeah. And, you know, and basically what you just said is like kind of what I see in my age, especially. Like, people aren't questioning, like, stuff, you know? Like it's like you just have to, like, okay, you get a piece of information. How does this apply to you? Do I question it, right? Like, these are all questions. Like, how do I test this instead of just taking it at face value and accepting it, no matter who it's from, right?
Absolutely.
So how are you able to maybe help someone get that switch of being able to be like, just question, maybe test what you do? Like, how is it, especially because my generation, I think, is very poor in that area, where just we need to be able to actually go and do stuff instead of just accepting whatever being told.
I think there's a bit of a societal phenomenon that has happened, right? So my parents were told, it was drilled into them, go to college, get a degree. That is the pipeline for success, right? Mm. Because college was where knowledge was stored. That was the repository of knowledge, right? When I went to school, we didn't have cell phones. Like, pagers were just like coming out. They were a thing, right? You were cool if you had a pager. But we're not in this age of having to seek knowledge, because when you have to seek knowledge, right, you have to actually do some research, and there has to be a bit of a scientific method or scientific process that is applied. You know, you might read 2 books and they might have slightly conflicting data, so maybe you have to go read a third, right? But right now, knowledge is so readily accessible. Virtually the world's data is accessible in just a few seconds at our fingertips. And I think because of that, our ability to do research, our ability to filter the data that we're getting, has been compromised. And unfortunately, you know, there's an old kind of saying that I think no longer applies. It needs to be changed. And that was the term common sense. And it really should be called uncommon sense now, because I feel it's becoming rarer and rarer. And I definitely don't want to sound like one of those old curmudgeons, you know, oh, the world's going to hell in a handbasket, right, kind of a thing. Because I think the world is becoming more abundant, more amazing, more productive. You know, if you look at just the stats, we're living longer, there's less homicides, there's less, you know, deaths at infant mortality, childbirth deaths, less disease, et cetera, et cetera. The world is objectively getting better. Fact, full stop. And our ability to critically think is the 21st century skill that needs to be developed, because it's no longer data that we need. It's no longer knowledge. It's the ability to critically think, to communicate, to put together teams, to work cooperatively.
Yeah. And I think this is a great kind of segue to aviation, but there's a saying in maintenance where it's trust but verify.
Oh man, exactly.
And it's so true, because there's so many, sometimes when you go into a new shop in maintenance, they'll say, oh, well, that's just how we do things around here, or hey, I'm just trying to get this done. This is how you do this, right? But sure, you can say, okay, well, he has more experience than me, but let's trust that, but let's also verify and make sure that what he is saying is going to be according to the manuals and any kind of publications that we have to go through. And I kind of want to ask you a little bit through your aviation story. I think there's a lot of different lessons that actually helped me incredibly go towards a path of critical thinking that aviation is just so rich in, I think. And if people applied it to business, to their everyday lives, I mean, that's kind of why I did the podcast altogether, right? Business, aviation, personal growth, because in my life, I think those really tied together. So I guess I want to talk to you a little bit about your aviation story, and more particularly, like, is there any lessons or anything that maybe you've learned or applied from in doing so and being part of it?
Still to this day, I'm afraid of heights, right? And which is interesting coming from a guy who flies planes, skydives, base jumps, wingsuits, climbs rocks, all of those things. But what I learned is that fear is based on a lack of knowledge, right? Whatever you're afraid of, it's typically rooted in a lack of knowledge. And my aviation story, my aviation kind of life, if you will, was started because a mentor of mine, a real estate mentor of mine, said, you know, hey, do you want to go up to Sedona and get a cheeseburger tomorrow? And I was like, no, I don't have the time, right? It's a beautiful part of Arizona. I know I don't have the time. He goes, oh no, we'll fly there in my plane. You're not afraid of small planes, are you? And of course, being a young guy in my 20s, my chest puffed out about, you know, this big, and no, I'm not afraid of small planes. But inside, I was like, yes, I'm terrified of small planes, right? We get up, we take off. I am white knuckling it, man. I am not having a good time. And he looks over and he just says, hey, take a breath. And so, you know, okay, I take a breath. And he says, hey, take the controls, right? And I take the controls and he's like, look, it's simple. Left is left, right is right, push is down, pull is up, you're flying. And suddenly, you know, whoa, I'm calm now. And I'm in, of course, I'm in control, so that helped. But he's starting to explain Bernoulli's principles and these different things that are in effect. And listen, physics are in effect. The plane's not just going to fall out of the sky. That's not going to happen, right? Even if the engine shuts off, we've got this 10-to-1 glide ratio and we can look for places to land. And he's talking me through this. And suddenly I find myself understanding what is going on, and that dissipates so much of my fear. And as I continued to progress through my aviation knowledge, you know, now I'm instrument rated. So now I can fly through the clouds. Now I'm multi-engine rated. I can fly more complex equipment. You know, I've got my high performance endorsement, et cetera, et cetera. And as you gain knowledge, fear dissipates. And I think that that's part of one of the things that allows people to take risks is if you pursue knowledge, the actual risk is lowered, but also the perceived risk is lowered. Both of those things are lowered in the pursuit of knowledge.
Yeah, no, I'm so glad that you mentioned that. And it's I think just really getting people to just embrace curiosity, because if we switch words, and I'm a big believer of like whenever there's a way you could say a sentence negatively, like a really classic example is like, oh, like, how are you feeling? Like if someone's sick, and I'll say instead of being like, oh, like, maybe I might still feel sick or something, but I'll still try to say, oh, I'm getting better minute by minute, because it's truth, you know, and I get to choose what, because everything is out there, right? Like me being sick, me being better, me being okay. I think I get to choose the tunnel of what I get to see. So I try to use kind of those positive words, but yeah, embracing just like curiosity, or turning exactly that fear into curiosity, I think is just so great, because that's exactly what you explained, and how being able to just, the more you know, the less you're going to be scared of something, and just going for it, and just jumping, you know, like quite literally for skydiving, yeah, right? Yeah. Just going for it. Yeah.
I love your point here, man. That is so critical, and it is all about your perspective and your mindset, and that gets back to, you know, your mindset constructs your reality. It is fully based on, you know, your, so, you know, there's a quote, I'm not sure who it was attributed to. I've seen anonymous, I've seen other people, but it's, you know, be careful of your mindset, for, you know, your mindset develops your thoughts. Your thoughts are where your words come from. Your words become your actions. Actions become your habits. Habits become your character. And your character becomes your destiny. And it's right there at the very onset. You know, it's a small little change to say like, well, I'm sick, I feel like garbage, to, you know, I'm getting better, right? I mean, that costs you virtually no caloric difference, no time difference, no energy difference, no difference other than that little thing. And that could have a major impact in your life. Like, oh, I failed this test, I'm so dumb, versus I didn't do as well as I'd hoped, I'm learning a bunch and I'll do better on the next one. You know, just those little changes, man. And over time and over the years, they compound and can create massive changes.
I'm so glad that you say that too, because I told my great aunt about it too, and it's one of those things because I try to get her into like Think and Grow Rich. I was trying to do like a book group with one of my friends, and I was doing all these templates, and I sent her one of them, and that was the one thing I stuck with her. You know, it's like, okay, like how do I change? Especially in aviation maintenance too, you'll hear like, oh, I'm so stupid, right? Like, oh my gosh, right? You hear it all the time. But it's like just that one change I've really dramatically noticed in my life that it just helped me just create, and it does shape reality. I think what you say just really does come true because that is what you're focused on, you know? So it becomes your perspective, your reality, all of it. Yeah.
Object fixation. I know you're familiar with
Yes.
object fixation. You know, wherever the head, and this is a thing in skydiving and in parachute sports, wherever the head and kind of wherever you're naturally looking is where eventually the body goes. So, you know, my grandfather, I learned this from both of my grandfathers, my grandparents. My parents were divorced at a young age, so I spent a lot of time with my grandparents. Thank God they were available and willing and wanted to raise me. I'm sure they had an outsized influence in my life, but my grandparents taught me something very basic. It's so simple. And that is, you know, Thomas, you have to be a man or a person of your word. Your word is your bond, right? That is your bond in life. And I just took it one step further. And I'm like, well, if you have to do the things that you say, only say cool stuff. You know? It's like only ever say cool things, right? Like, why? I guess I got to do that. I said it, you know? So just wherever you're pointed is where you will go. So just point to areas that you want to go. And if you're pointed and you're in a relationship, oh, this person is so mean. They're so terrible. They're so horrible. Well, that could be true. And if it's true, maybe the relationship needs to be over. Or maybe, you know, that's only 5% of the time. And this person really is great. And I'm appreciative of how amazing they are for me and for my family. And that little shift can impact them, and then suddenly, you know, they're reciprocating your gratitude and things get better. You know, it's either a virtuous cycle or, you know, a precipitous decline.
Yeah, I'm so glad that. So something that I learned too from this book called Neurolinguistic Programming, The Essential Guide. Have you read that, or just in
I've
general?
taken NLP courses. I took a week-long NLP course many years ago. It's so critical. A lot of people call it pseudoscience, but you know, they said that was true about quantum mechanics and quantum science, right? Like, I don't know how you can have two particles entangled, be ultimate distances apart, and the one can affect the other. So, you know, I don't pretend to know everything. I think we have a funny presupposition in life, and that is this, that if we can't prove it's true, we assume it's not. And I say, just flip that. If you can't disprove it, then accept it could be true. Right? And that's my approach to neurolinguistic programming. It's very much, you know, the way that you present the world to your own mind.
Yes. And you're please, after the episode, send me where you got your certification, because I've been trying to find where to continue. But
I will.
yes, but one of the things that the book said was exactly what you just mentioned, the shift in perspective and how it really relates to conflict resolution. Where you there's people that sometimes just fixated on the self. How does it affect me? How is this person affecting me? Okay, about the second point of view, how is this affecting the other person? And more importantly, the third point of view. If I was someone from the outside looking at this situation, how would I look at this, right? More in a neutral perspective. So I like in that example how you were talking about, you know, well, you know, there's this bad thing about a person, or not so good, and then there's really great aspects that I'm maybe not looking at. I think the most important part is really being able to have that option and tools to know I can switch through different perspectives, right? And in this conversation, and see, okay, how do I make that decision if this person is affecting me in a good way or in a not so good way, right? So I'm glad that you said that. But I would,
Just to quickly tie on to the NLP thing, you know, I remember when I was taking my course, and our instructor was our teacher was telling us about he had a son who was maybe 4 or 5, and you know, daddy, 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 I'm scared. there's a monster in my closet or under my bed, right? And he goes, oh, tell me more. Let's hear about this monster, right? Because you can immediately understand the kid has made a bunch of presuppositions, a bunch of assumptions, which are incredibly dangerous, right? If you're not making good assumptions. And he goes, tell me more, you know, tell me about this monster. Does he have big sharp teeth? And the kid, oh yeah, 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 yeah. Does he have sharp teeth? You know, oh, and does the monster have spikes on his back? Yeah, oh, he's got spikes on his back. And does he have a, you know, really sharp claws? Yeah, yeah, he does. And, you know, have you ever seen the monster? Well, no. Well, what if the monster is only like this big? And the kid's like, well, he's like, could that be true? Could the monster only be this big? And the kid's like, well, yeah. And he goes, and what if the monster's name is Mr. Sprinkles? You know, and you kind of see the kid suddenly transforming, right, to this giant presupposition of this monster, to this tiny, and then the dad does a funny voice, you know, and he's like, you know, oh, hi, I'm Mr. Sprinkles, the monster, or whatever that is, right? And now the kid's laughing, and they're laughing, and suddenly the kid goes right to sleep because he was able to reframe all of those presuppositions into something totally different. And that's something that I'm guilty of absolutely all the time, and I have to challenge myself, like, hey, what presuppositions am I bringing to the table? And this is even just a day-to-day interaction. Wow, that person was really mean to me. They must hate me. Well, maybe, or maybe, you know, their grandfather or their dad is sick, or their child is in the hospital for something. You know what I mean? Like, there's so many assumptions that we make that are just flat out wrong. And I like to say, like, I have a story. And if you start with, I have a story, what you've done now is you've made your assumptions very malleable, right? Like, they're not as rigid as you knowing something. That there's an old joke, you know, what did the Americans do with the old Italian design question? Well, they answered it, right? But that's not really what you're supposed to do with a design question. It's meant to be a state of inquiry, constantly thinking and constantly challenging, right? You don't answer the design question. You stay in a state of inquiry. And if we're constantly in a state of inquiry, oh, wow, that person was really mean. I wonder what's going on with them. I wonder if there's something happening in their life that I don't know, right? That's a state of inquiry. And it's very difficult for me to be in a state of inquiry. I'm often in a state of knowing, but what a great place to be is in this state of inquiry.
Yeah. And I think that relates back to just curiosity, what we were saying, just, okay, what is there more to this, right? And that critical thinking, what more is out there? And the techniques that you mentioned are awesome because those are part of the book that I heard too, because we'll have a lot of things that we'll tell ourselves like, oh, maybe we're not good enough, or I will never be able to do this, or we can't have that. That's not for us, right? Maybe in terms of finance. And in NLP, it talks about how these voices, it doesn't have to be, you know, just auditory. It can be an image that comes to your head too. And exactly for a specific technique was, if it was a voice and you're able to trace it back through your own questioning of, okay, maybe it was through my parents that said this, right? What if I play around and try to relive that memory and try to change it a little bit? Maybe even if that voice comes back, what if I pretend it's in a higher pitch or in a funny voice, right? So that no longer affects me in that same just depth that it used to before.
Absolutely. That visceral primal response, you know, absolutely.
Yeah. So that's awesome that we're able to share that with people, to be able to see just if there's any experiences that you've had, just be curious about it and go back and see, where did this come from? What does it look like whenever this kind of just imposition or something that's stopping you to get in the way of what you're wanting to achieve, where is it coming from? Because if you go back, then you're able to build upon it and change your framework into being able to actually turn into something positive.
Well, we're all biological computers, you know, and when was the last time that you did a software update? You know, are you running software from 5-year old version of you? You know, and I oftentimes am, you know, when maybe another kid or a parent or a teacher was yelling at me, or, you know, there was some circumstance, and you onboard that, and that becomes part of kind of your software, and you have to go back and you've got to challenge that software. You have to override it, or at a minimum, you have to kind of be aware of it. And my wife's a Buddhist. She's a very, I dare say enlightened. She wouldn't say enlightened, but she seems to have a lot more awareness of herself, right, than many people. And, you know, it's like many people, the anger train, right, will be coming. Like something will happen and here comes the anger train and they just hop right on, right? They don't even think about it. They just hop right on. And the more awareness that you can have, you can kind of see that train coming and you can say, okay, I see that train coming and I'm just going to let it pass. You know, there it goes. Okay, I felt the emotion, feeling it's okay, but that emotion doesn't own me. And that's one of the things that people ask me, you know, like, well, Thomas, aren't you afraid when you base jump off of a mountain that you might die? And I say, absolutely. I am absolutely afraid. But I tell fear, hey, I see you. I acknowledge you. Now get in the back seat. I'm driving. This is my life, right? You don't dictate life's terms to me. I dictate the terms of my life, right? Nobody gets to validate my experience. You know, the world didn't happen to me. I happened to the world.
Yeah. And that's a great, great mindset shift. I think part of something that I've seen a lot in entrepreneurs is definitely the way that I think we're just like hardwired is wanting to go and search. And I think part of and grow. And I think a big part of growing is finding knowledge and teachers and more specifically mentors. From our conversation, I've heard little sayings that you have that are just so engraved in you. I can just tell the way you say it. It's almost as if your mentor is saying it through you. But part of some things that I have too is trust but verify. Another one's like money is energy. So yes. I like that one a lot because it's like it can't be in it has to be in a state of moving. It can't just stay in one place. And I think if you think just phrasing different things that you're able to apply in your life just goes such a long way. I don't know if there's a mentor in your life that really impacted the way that you thought. And how was it that you're able to find this mentor? What things did you learn and how that ultimately shaped your path into what you do now?
I have another core belief philosophy, and that's activity begets activity, right? You know, like in the ancient kind of religious books, you know, so-and-so begot so-and-so who begot so-and-so, right? Well, you know, activity begets activity. And you can certainly kind of go out and seek mentorship, right? I think that's absolutely something we should all do. But more important than that, like put yourself in the arena, whatever the arena is, it doesn't matter. But like, if you just stay at home and sit on the couch and doom scroll, there's no activity to beget further social connections. There's no activity to help connect you to other entrepreneurs. So you have to put yourself out there. And then, you know, I like to do one hard thing per day, whatever that hard thing is, right? It might be a cold plunge or it might be introducing myself to someone I'm intimidated by. As a matter of fact, one of my colleagues in the office here, sharp young guy, motivated. And, you know, I took him up and he got to watch a base jump of mine. And he was just, his mind was blown. Wow, how do you do it? All these things. And I said, listen, Mike, you know, do something hard today. What scares you? And he goes, ooh, introducing myself to people. That is scary for me, right? I go, great. I want you to do it 10 times today. And he's like, immediately got a panic attack just thinking about doing it. I go, let me tell you what's going to happen. The first 1, 2, 3, you're not going to like it, right? It will be uncomfortable. You won't like it. 4, 5, 6, you'll calm down a little bit. And then 7, 8, 9, you'll be like, this is old hat. I've got it. No problem. Because it's that fear of the unknown, right? What's going to happen when I introduce myself to people, right? Nothing. Like, nothing will happen. Like, they'll probably say hi. You'll probably have a conversation, and then life will carry on. You know, getting back to your people need to be willing to take risks. There is no such thing as debtor's prison anymore. You know, if you try something and you fail and you lost a bunch of money, like, that's too bad. That is very unfortunate, but you're not going to debtor's prison. We should all be so bold as to be taking risks for the things in life that are meaningful to us. And just circling back to, like, how did I go out and find mentors? Honestly, it just happened from my willingness to put myself in the arena, because I would be out there, or I would be, you know, doing projects, and I would be verbalizing. That's one of the keys. I would be verbalizing the things that excite me, right? Oh, I want to do this. I want to build the most sustainable apartment building in Arizona. My project, Eco Mesa, just won the 2023 Sustainable Project of the Year for Arizona from NAIOP, right? And I was able to speak that into fruition. I just kept saying it. And then somebody said, hey, you know, you should go talk to this other guy. He's also said something like that, right? So I go talk to them. Oh, hey, yeah, let's partner up and let's do it. And you know what? I've heard about these other people that have said that. So if it exists just in your mind, it's a dream, right? When you speak it into reality, it's now something that is real, right? So activity begets activity, and then speak your goals, speak those things into reality, because otherwise nobody's going to know who to connect you with. Nobody's going to be inspired by your story. And I've had mentors that have literally come found me through a friend who, like, I'll have an older friend, and they'll go, hey, you know, you really should meet so-and-so. They're a rock star. You know, you're really doing some amazing things in life. I think you two would enjoy one another's time. And I mentor people. And I can tell you, as someone who mentors younger people, like, it is so fulfilling. I can give of myself what costs me effectively nothing, a little bit of time, but no resources. I'm giving my knowledge, I'm giving my experience, and I say, take it with a filter, take it with a grain of sand, it might not be right, but I'm giving this something that costs nothing, and that can radically change the direction of their life. And that's what I think older mentors have to give, and that they get fulfillment from giving of themselves. So that's just kind of my philosophy on mentorship and how to make things happen. How do you make it happen? You get in the arena, you speak it into fruition, and you don't give up. You can't be beat if you don't give up.
Yeah. And looking back on how I've been able to just be connected with mentors, I think it's exactly that. I've never really found a one way or solution. I think it's just been, yeah, oh, you should talk to this guy. He thinks similarly to you, or you might want to get together and just talk about what kind of business ideas you have. But that would never happen if you don't actually go and do whatever. So to exactly. And say it too. So that's great. What is your vision now? So is there anything right now that you're focused towards? Not just goals. I mean, I think based on speaking today, definitely overcoming your fear of heights, being able to just grow and learn as an individual, especially with your real estate, which I think hopefully we can kind of get a little bit into more, but we are kind of towards that time, but we'll see how much you're able to talk about it. But what is the overall vision that you have, or what is it? What is all these projects or goals that you've had that is leading to what?
Yeah. So a couple of different things. I've got a couple ideas I'd love to share, and I think they'll really hopefully excite you and maybe some of the folks that listen. You know, first off, I think that we have an amazing opportunity right now at this kind of inflection point of technology and thinking of material sciences, computer science, you know, different technologies that are kind of coming together. So a couple of different things. Number one, I think that the built environment is going to radically change in the next 40 to 50 years, right? It's really going to be much more holistically approached. We, you know, if you go back 100 years, homes and the environment had to be built with, the built environment structures had to be built with the environment in mind, because we didn't have air conditioning, right? We didn't have all of these quote unquote technologies. And what happened was we got kind of smart, but we got kind of dumb. You know, I live here in Phoenix, Arizona, and we build these houses with these giant south-facing windows or these giant east-west-facing windows. letting in absolutely enormous amounts of, you know, heat energy, right? The indigenous people wouldn't have done that. They would have had mostly north-facing windows, right? And so I think we're kind of reverting back to this biophilic design, biomimicry design. And so I really am excited about the built environment and some of the changes coming down the pipeline in the built environment. Number two, I think capitalism is going to undergo a resurgence, right? I fundamentally believe in capitalism as a means to allocate resources. And I think we've just got capitalism a little wrong. You know, people say, you know, it's all about profit for the stockholders. And I go, well, you know, that's just one metric. There's a variety of metrics that we can incorporate that live to more holistic lives. You know, the old joke about people that work their whole life just so they can have a little bit of free time with their family. It's like, but that's what it's all about, you know? So maybe we need to kind of reshape the machine so that it gets us the outputs that we're actually after. Because as you said, money just represents energy. Money for the pursuit of money is useless. But money for the pursuit of what it allows you to do is where meaning, you know, that meaningful relationship to money can happen. And then, look, man, if you were to say, Thomas, where do you hope the world is in 100 years, right? By the way, there's going to be an epic party. You're probably going to be there. It's December 31st, 2099. You should be there, man. It's going to be great. a lot of fun. I'm hoping I can make it. I'll be 116.
Yeah. So I'll at least RSVP.
Yeah, good. All right. Me too. I hope I can actually attend. So my vision for the future is this. We will have figured out a few things. We will have figured out clean, cheap, renewable, abundant energy, right? There's a giant nuclear fusion machine in the sky that pours down so much energy. From a human standpoint, it's limitless. It's limitless, right? So when we figure out clean, cheap, renewable, abundant energy, I have a vision for a planet that is two colors, maybe three. And those two colors are blue and green, with maybe a little bit of white at the poles, right? We're going to effectively get rid of brown on our planet. How are we going to do that? If you look at Earth, it's, what, 75% covered by water, okay? There is no shortage of water on this planet. There's a shortage of potable water in the right location, okay? So I think if you were to overlay the map of the U.S. with oil pipelines, it's a very kind of diverse crisscross web of pipelines. We are figuring out how to desalinate ocean water at very, very efficient levels with solar stills. And I think we're going to do this in some critical parts of the world, right? The Southwest United States. I think Australia is the best, most promising place for us to do this because it's one continent. It's the lowest elevation continent on the planet. It is a single government, right? The Australian government is the whole continent. And we are going to be able to start reforesting the world. What's going to happen when we do that? Well, we're going to sequester carbon. Temperatures will go down. Biodiversity will go up. Timber industries will skyrocket. Agriculture industries will skyrocket. Ecotourism will skyrocket, right? The amount of fires will go down. Other insurance costs will go down. We will be living in, quite frankly, the best place in the universe to live, in my opinion. So that's my long-term vision and my long-term belief in where we will be as a species. We've just kind of got to get past a lot of the silly nonsense that we're stuck on these days. So, yeah. The other thing is, everyone looks up at the sky and they see one renewable resource, the sun. There's actually two. Space is a renewable resource. It is infinitely cold in space. What does that mean? Well, our atmosphere is roughly 78% nitrogen, 78, 79% nitrogen, 20 to 21% oxygen, and a handful of those other gases, right? What does that mean? That means that at a very specific spectrum in light, you can emit heat energy to space and it will pass right through our atmosphere. It will not be impeded by any of the gases in our atmosphere. And there's some really brilliant scientists that are working on this right now from a nanotechnology, nanomaterials, different paints standpoint. They're able to emit light at this particular wavelength that goes right out into space, and we're able to cool surfaces below ambient temperature, right? this is really amazing. We're going to be able to push excess heat out into space using space's infinite coldness as another renewable resource.
Wow, that's a great perspective to just see that there are, and being able to go back to just a state of using what's available to us. But what people used to do back in the day, where it just really was just so holistic and helping the environment. Something really cool that I learned the other day is there's this company that's putting mirrors up into space to be able to deflect the sun in certain areas, and you can choose exactly where it could point to. So as you were saying all this, I was like, yeah, there's another way right there. And being able to go back to using these resources that are effectively going to help the world and the earth. And well, essentially what you just said for your vision, which is great.
Yep. Yeah. There's no reason everyone on the planet can't have food. There's no reason we can't all have shelter. There's no reason we can't coexist with basically every other form of life on this planet. There's no actual reason. There's no physics reason here. These are all engineering problems that are solvable. So I really believe, and I look forward to a wonderfully abundant, beautiful future. And it will be incumbent upon folks like me and, you know, the younger generation, folks like you, to bring about these wonderful concepts to reality.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a great way to leave it at that, and have, you know, view listeners just really ponder that and see how they can add that to their lives too. I think that's a great vision. Yeah.
I love it. And just living your truth and living your bliss is another way to contribute. Yes. You know, you don't have to change the world to just be a part of a better today. You know, forget a better tomorrow. Forget that. Tomorrow will never get here. Let's just have a better today.
Yes. Yeah. Is there, this has been great. And thank you so much for coming on. I think I've learned a lot, and I'm actually going to think a lot about what you just said towards the end, because I think that is really impactful.
But there's a lot of money to digest. Look, if you can figure out how to desalinate, you are going to make oodles of money from the timber industry, agriculture, ecotourism, carbon sequestering, oodles of money. One last thing here. The obstacle is the way, right? The obstacle is the opportunity. All of these things in life that are the problem, they are the opportunity. And
That's right. You
can approach it with that mentality, like, you will unlock billions and trillions of dollars.
Yes. Yeah. There are no problems, only opportunities.
That is right, man. Yeah. No waste, only resources.
Oh, I like that. Yeah. Well, Thomas, this has been so awesome. Thank you so much for coming on. Do you want to leave anything so people can reach out to you or see what you've been up to, or if you've been able to, or how your journey has gone along through your path of what you just said today?
Yeah, you know, I've gone through a few dark moments in my life, and I would just share, you know, it always gets better. You know, there's some up and down patches. And if you want to reach out to me, you can certainly find more on my company's website, Lucrom, L-U-K-R-O-M, lucrom.com. I am on socials and all of that stuff, but quite honestly, you know, live your dream. You want to reach out to me, you can find me on socials. You can find me on my company's website. I'd love to contribute to a better today. So.
Well, thank you so much. This has been From Ground to Great with Thomas McPherson. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks so much. Take care.
Yeah. Yeah. You too.